Isn't it time that you powerfully aligned with your soul's purpose and activated your divine gifts and talents so that you can thrive in the new paradigm? Welcome to Soul Purpose Central with internationally acclaimed radio host Jennifer Longmore, North America's Soul Purpose Expert. You've been divinely guided here because something deep within your diamond light longs to be activated so that you can joyously evolve through your ascension journey. Congratulations! You have arrived at the right place. After 20,000 soul purpose and healing sessions, Jennifer now joyfully shares with you her profound wisdom and experience in the Akashic Records, multidimensional healing, and all that is relevant to your creation story as a unique spark of divine light, love. Join us each week for your connection to the wisdom of the collective Akasha and selected experts who can align you to all things soul purpose. Prepare to be activated, aligned, and accelerated on your ascension path. Now, here's your host, Jennifer Longmore.
Welcome, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to Soul Purpose Central. I'm your host, Jennifer Longmore, North America's Soul Purpose Expert and host of this radio show. I'm really, really excited to connect with you today because I have a very special guest to introduce you to. Her name is Angela Gia Kim. She's a friend and a colleague, and she is a go-to lifestyle and business expert for Cosmo, Wall Street Journal, and NBC, and she's helped thousands of women achieve their dreams through inspirational and practical hands-on tips. She's the founder of Omaroma, organic skincare brand, which is fantastic, and the founder of Savor the Success Entrepreneurial Network, which I'm a part of. And she pulls from her experiences in these different endeavors and her jet-setting concert pianist background, and as a New York City wife, and that would be the real New York City wife, not the reality TV show kind, and a mom to share how people can achieve success in all aspects of their life. And she's actually got a really neat method called the Manifest Method. It's an acronym for a process, and it's basically helping us get rid of what's holding us back so we can embrace what she calls the gorgeous chaos to manifest our dreams. And they're very popular workshops that she hosts, and I know there's some other special, exciting things that maybe, Angela, you'll be telling us about later. So over the past 3 years, she's traveled the world speaking to thousands of women just like you. She's appeared on major market TV and radio shows as a go-to lifestyle and business expert, and she's been featured in a variety of magazines and MSNBC's Small Business Show. So without further ado, I would like to welcome Angela to the show. Welcome.
Thank you, Jennifer. I'm excited to be here. Can't wait to chat with you this morning.
Well, I'm excited to have you. So I think it goes without saying you've had a pretty rich life, and people are always curious, I find, and myself included, to hear how you got to this place. How did you find yourself on this kind of path right now?
Mm-hmm. Let's see, where shall I start? I think that I have a very unique, I guess you could call it, proposition for the world, in that I grew up in a very Asian, sort of strict discipline, strict rules, very, very tough, harsh upbringing. And then I became a concert pianist, which is just as exacting, just as demanding. So I really think I bring that into my, the work that I do today, which adds to the richness of, my desire for excellence, kind of this uncompromising standard that I hold myself and my team to. But, sometime along the road, I realized that I could not live my life like that anymore, where it was all about outside praise, standing ovations, what the critics said, what my professor said, if I gave a perfect performance or not. Like, I was so miserable and unhappy. And so I realized that I needed to have, kind of figure out a way to lead an exceptional life without this background that I had, that I wanted to do it joyfully. I wanted to do it in a much more carefree, light, and happy way. And so that's sort of how I came to, start Omaroma, and then eventually Savor the Success, as you mentioned. And the Manifest Method is really just about that. It's how do you manifest what you want to the level of success that you want without the drudgery and the the dread that often comes to building success. What I found that was interesting is, you know, my classical music days, in that world, people were able to manifest what they wanted very quickly, meaning you get this piece of music, it's filled with millions of dots of notes, and these people have the skill and the discipline and the perseverance to know how to learn that stuff and then get on stage and perform it under tremendous pressure. But they're kind of all miserable, you know, along the way. And then what I was finding with, you know, this new world that I was in, my employees, my fellow entrepreneurs, they had this sort of a more joyful way of building. They had a more positive lifestyle, but they were missing certain tools and skills to learn how to build that kind of level of success. So I think that's what I when you ask, you know, how did you get here? I think, you know, I'm kind of marrying the two worlds, and that's why we are here.
I love how you shared that, and it's getting my brain spinning around certain ingredients that need to be present in order to be successful. Mm-hmm. And so often I talk to people, as I'm sure you do as well, and they can kind of get into this passive place of, I don't know why my life isn't turning out the way I want it to, or I don't know why my business isn't, or any of these different things. And it's not like we can just kind of will something to be happen, it will be so. So what do you feel are those ingredients that really make the difference between someone who actually achieves their goals and someone who just kind of thinks about their goals?
I think a lot of it has to do with discipline, honestly. I think that it's funny because I think discipline is what made me so unhappy in my earlier days, but I think discipline, if done right, can actually lead to fulfillment and success. And I think the other missing ingredient often is doing it in a joyful way with a sense of wonderment, you know, with a childlike sense of, oh, my God, what would happen if I did this and made this mistake? You know, it's fine. It's okay. You know, no one's dead. And kind of that can lead to success. So it's interesting how I find that, you know, like especially I worry, honestly, Jennifer, I do worry as someone who employs a lot of people. I see, like, this culture that we're all growing up in, there's, like, everyone wants immediate gratification, and they don't have the wherewithal to, like, have the discipline and realize that you're not going to be happy all the time when you're building something that's meaningful and quality and that can eventually lead to a lot of success in your life. On the other hand, you know, how do you extract the joy as you're building and using that discipline? So I kind of feel like those two things, discipline and joy, are really missing from, are missing ingredients. There's a lot more, but it really boils down to those two principles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with you on that. And when you're talking about extracting the joy, I often say to coaching clients, you know, when you're uncomfortable, and you will be uncomfortable when you're growing, whether it's something that you're shifting personally or something that you're shifting in your business, that's where it can become less joyful. But if you actually instantly celebrate it and go, oh, I must be growing if I'm uncomfortable, I'm supposed to have growing pains, then we can embrace them. They don't have to be as painful. They don't have to last as long. And then we can celebrate the fact that, oh, yay, if I'm uncomfortable, it means I've already left the very comfort zone I said I wanted to leave. So, you know, let's embrace what's next, kind of like what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. I think that I also find that people kind of give up before they get there. I also think, you know, a lot of, you know, I go into this in the manifest method, but I think a lot of people they think they're low, you know, and so, like, you're an amazing coach. There are so many coaches out there. I'm a big proponent of get your A-team activated around you, and that means, you know, I have, like, three coaches in my life. It, depending on what's going on, you know, like, if I'm having issues with my employees, I have an employer coach, you know, someone who really coaches me through that. If I'm feeling stuck, I have a life coach, you know. So I just think that it's really important that you find somebody that's just there to just 100% support you and help you, call you out on your bullshit, you know, get you, you know. But then also, I think it boils down to making sure that there's no toxic people in your life. I mean, I'm not somebody that, I'm not like a Michael Jackson believer where you need to have yes people around you. I do think that you need people to be like, wait, have you thought about this? Wait, are you going down the right path? You know, you need to think, but it's important that those people are not toxic and they're not they're people who genuinely want you to succeed. And then just having really fruitful friendships and relationships around you, I mean, that's just kind of like, that will help you. If you surround yourself with people who can kind of play the game better than you can, and if you surround yourself with people who are maybe even more amazing at certain skills that you want to have, it really forces you to get better, you know, and it forces you to act out. So your question was, or act up, you know, step up to the plate. Because your question was, you know, what's your advice for people who just can't seem to, you know, get to that next level? I really think that a lot of it is, you know, when I was a concert pianist, what I would do is I would go to concerts of people who were more accomplished than I was, or who were really famous musicians, or I'd buy their CDs and listen to, you know, a piece that I was working on. And God, there's nothing more motivating than when you're just learning a piece and you can't play it very well, and you hear someone who can play it really well, then you're like, it should do something to you. It makes you kind of be like, well, I can do it too, you know, and the possibilities are much more wide open when you do that.
That's a really fantastic suggestion, and I actually want to stay with the point that you made around surrounding yourself with your A-team and making sure that you're surrounding yourself, for example, with friends that, you know, are really showing up and showing up for you and, you know, calling you to be your best, basically. One of the things that I hear a lot, and I imagine you hear it a lot as well, is women feeling disconnected from a lot of people, either feeling like the relationships that they have are toxic or, you know, just not supportive, or they're really isolated and they don't really have a lot of friendships, and they talk about how it's hard for them to make friends. So what would you recommend to people that are kind of hiding behind that as a way to not be supported?
You know, this goes with what I call flow. Like, you know when you know you're supposed to do something and you're not, and there are certain blockers? That's really affecting your flow, you know? And so sometimes it's things, and sometimes it's what we're talking about right now is people. So, like, with people, you know, if they're in your life, they're meant to teach you something, and if you've learned your lesson and you're meant to move on, it's really important to move on. But let's say that you're kind of stuck with that person, okay? So there are a number of things that you can do. You can, depending on how closely tied you are to that person, you can figure out ways that they cannot, you know, hinder you. Okay, so for example, let's say somebody is jealous of you, okay? That happens to a lot of women, right? So you have people that are jealous around you. Well, one thing that you can do to protect yourself is not talk about what you're doing to that person, because that person genuinely does not want the very best for you. So you know what? You're going to have to hide it from that person. And it may be, I really believe that when you have a dream and you have a goal, that is so precious, and it's such a vulnerable part of yourself that you have to protect it with everything that you can. And so therefore, you cannot show it to the person who's going to try to snatch it from you. So, okay, so let's say, you know, you're in that living condition where you have to be around this person all the time. You know, you don't, like if it's a friend, you know, and, or a team member, or I don't know, like if you're at work and it's an employer, a fellow coworker, you know, you can easily hide whatever it is that you need, you're dreaming, scheming, doing in your life. You can hide that, but let's say it's with someone that you live with 24/7, it's your husband, it's your mother, it's your father, it's whatever, somebody that you're with all the time. You need to take steps to really get out of that environment, whether it means that you've got to get a job and you need to, you know, you're old enough and you can move out. You know, you've got to really distance yourself the moment that the person starts to go there, and you know what I mean by go there, you know, try to put down your dreams, try to blockade yourself. You must just put this, like, armor of shield around you. You can't let them go there, you know, because, like I said, your dreams, your desires, your goals are so precious. They're your gold. They're everything to you. I mean, it's what you're, I believe, people are meant to, they come into this world and they're meant to give birth to something really special that no one else can do except for you. You have to protect that. You know, it's almost like you're pregnant. and you've got this baby. You know, you can't let anyone hurt that baby. And so, I don't know, you can tell that I'm very passionate about this. Just because I see so many women, you know, they're like, well, so-and-so says I can't do it. But you're meant to, if you want to do it, you're meant to do it. So you have to protect that. I don't know, did that answer the question?
Yeah, absolutely. And I love the metaphor that you use because I think it really drives it home.
Yeah, oh, about the baby?
Yeah.
Yeah. What is?
No. I mean, it's a really beautiful way to look at it, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Because you would never, ever let anyone harm your baby.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what our creations are.
Yeah.
Whatever we're giving birth to. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's great advice because it really goes back to that discipline, right, of being able to take a stand and saying, okay, here's my vision. Here's what I'm prepared to do to make my vision a reality. And here's my, you know, here are my non-negotiables, and here's what I'm going to do to make it happen. And if it means shifting some relationships in order to invite in some new ones that actually reflect where I want to be, then that's what I have to do.
And also I think, Jennifer, that oftentimes the universe will send you people in your life to see if you've really learned a lesson. You know, these people are meant to be in your life to teach you a lesson, okay? So once you've learned it, it's important that you really learn it and that you reject it. So, you know, let me give you a story. When I was in Montreal, I was really, really lonely, and I had just come off of a very serious relationship, and I was, like, licking my wounds, sitting in my apartment all alone. And so, and then I met this guy, and I was sort of like, all right, well, I'm just so lonely that I'll just, you know, I knew that he's not someone that I really wanted to date, but loneliness does funny things to you. So I decided to, you know, go out with him for a while. And one thing is that my dad had a terrible temper. And so I believe that I was meant to cut that tie out of my life immediately. Because you know how, you know, when you grow up with something, you tend to go toward that thing? Well, I think that was a defining moment in my life because this guy lost his temper on something really stupid, and I felt the way I felt when I was growing up with my father. And so I had a moment where I could decide to stay with him, or I had a moment where I could decide not to. And it was that, it was like kind of like that moment where it was very, very important that whatever my actions were is going to affect my life, you know? And so I just said, you know, you need to get out of here right now. And he was like, well, I'm really sorry, I'm sorry. And he started to, you know, he wanted to get me roses and do all this stuff to woo me back. And as tempting as it was, I was like, I said to myself, I choose loneliness over this because this is not what I want in my life. And I really think that that was such a strong message of getting rid of toxicity in my life, that I'd rather be alone than surround myself with that, that I think that that opened the pathway for me to find my husband, who's like the most loving, gentle, supportive man ever, you know. So I think sometimes when we're presented with this and it comes back at you, the universe is sort of watching. Hey, did you learn? And if you did learn, then we are going to open up this door for you.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's not about being punished and constantly attracting the same thing. It's about clearing the issue so that you don't attract it anymore.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, you manifest things really quickly. So when do you remember a time looking back that you started to become aware of the fact that you could manifest quickly?
I think that I became very aware of it when I I think it came down to when I saw my colleagues, like some of them were winning bigger competitions than I was winning, and that I was having more concert tours than they were. And I thought that was so interesting because I was like, what is it that I'm doing? They're winning bigger competitions than I am. They have more money. They're coming from more privileged backgrounds. So how come I have more concerts and making more money than they are? I think that's when I realized that I had a gift to manifest very quickly. And then when I was, like, launching Omaroma and Savor the Success, people would come up to me and they'd be like, wow, you seem to be able to get done a lot very quickly. And I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, my background as a concert pianist, being able to have the discipline to just push out, like, the baby. But a lot of it has to do with something that a lot you can do right away, and that's having a clear picture of what you want. I think that's, you know, and Jennifer, you and I were just at the Seven Figure Club retreat, and one thing that you heard me harp on a lot was create your vision page right now. And I hate that word vision page because it sounds so superficial, like, I just cut out magazines and blah, 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 blah. No, I mean, like, you know, one thing that's really important to me is to prototype something very quickly because I need to have proof of my vision outside of my body right away, you know. So when you have that clarity of picture and you're able to realize it in reality and in tangible substance, I think then that propels you toward your success much more quickly.
That makes sense for sure. It's almost like you own it differently when you see it outside of yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so then
it becomes real.
Yeah, it becomes real, and then it's like, then it gets a life of its own. I don't know, maybe you can like verbalize it better, articulate it better than I can. It just, I got to find a better way to articulate it because I can see it. Like, I know what it feels like when you throw something on a sheet of paper, you know, or you throw something out there, and it gets this life of its own, and it just starts to have this energy that just starts to propel you forward, you know?
Yeah, well, I think if I can articulate it, because you'd be very happy to know that I did a lot of visioning this weekend, several pages.
And
what I became aware of, it's not unlike what happens in the raw food movement, is that you're making things from an energy of love. And so when you're creating your vision, it's infused with joy and love and desire and passion and play, like all the very energies that make us highly magnetic. So when you're talking about, you know, thinking, we can think about the vision, but when we're manifesting, it's like we think it, we see it, and we feel it. And when those three ingredients are in place, that trinity of, you know, manifestation ingredients, I guess you could say, is what actually makes it happen quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
but
I did a vision for a personal assistant, and I've manifested that person, and they're starting at the beginning of next month. I manifested them in less than 24 hours.
And I think that, what did you say earlier? I thought that was really good. Think, see, feel.
Yeah, like you have to embody all of those three energies. Like you can't just think about something. You can't just think about wanting something to happen. You can't just feel like you want it to happen. You can think and feel it, and that's strong, but when you see it, like you can actually visualize it. And I do believe that seeing it in your mind's eye is strong, but less strong than actually creating it on paper.
And I think touching it is really important, you know, touching it. I do think that there's something really magical about that process that brings things into manifestation much more quickly. You know, like that's the thing, you know, Jennifer, I'm working on a book right now, and it's really about how to create an exceptional life through that's joyful as well. You know, that's the bottom line. And marrying my background with this more spiritual way of doing things. So for me, it's so important that I, like, you know, that's why I harp with I tell my book agent, I'm like, what's my next step? Because I need to put it out on paper right now. And I wake up at 4 or 5 in the morning and I'm working on putting it on paper and then printing it, and all the stuff and writing, and I just, that tactile feeling, there's something that just makes it come to life much more quickly. And also, I don't know if it also has to do with, you know, in many ways there's that adrenaline rush that you get because you can feel it, and so it gives you more energy to propel it forward even faster, you know?
Well, it also engages that energy you were talking about with discipline, because you have to be committed. Like, you can't just kind of see something in your mind's eye for 10 seconds and move along. You actually have to sit your butt down and really get clear on what you want. And it's almost like when you're cutting the paper and pasting it and writing things and all that stuff, you're so open for downloads that you can actually bring in more elements to the vision than you even realized you wanted. But to actually sit down and commit to that creative process, which is an essential part of manifesting, you have to be willing to download it and then literally create it. It's almost like it already happens on the page, and then the physical manifestation of that is just kind of like the cherry on top, because in that moment it's already happened, and then you just kind of have to wait for it to show up.
Mm-hmm. I think it has to do also with accessing the right brain.
Yeah.
And oftentimes when you are building, let's say, a business or whatever you need to do, the left brain is so activated, but when there's something creative happening, that right brain, you know, really gets activated and can bring things to fruition faster than left brain can. But the left brain can't function without the right brain, and the right brain can't do it without the left brain, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So if people are listening to this and maybe their, you know, inner monkey mind voice is kind of chatting at them and, you know, bringing up the yeah buts, or, well, it's easy for her because she's trained, or, you know, it must be nice, but I don't have it in me, or any of those thoughts that people are having, what would you say to folks about where to get started with really manifesting effectively?
Okay, so, so definitely people are always like, well, you were trained as a concert pianist, that's why you're able to do this. Okay, I want to say something really loud and clear. How you treat and it is true, like, but that's the thing, that's what my gift to the world is. I want to teach people how to have that sort of that stick-to-itiveness, that discipline to get things done, get shit done, and yet still be joyful, right? So the way you treat small things in life is how you treat the big things. So there are small things that you can do daily that are going to affect the bigger things that are meant to come to you. So, for example, you know, there are little things that you can do to start developing discipline in your daily life to make things happen. Okay, if you say you're going to do something, just do it. You know, let's say you have a commitment to a friend and you don't feel like doing it. And there are a lot of people who just choose to not do it. They won't even address it. But every time you do that, what you're strengthening is your non-discipline muscle. Every time you actually make yourself do it, even though you don't really want to, and it's still in integrity with what you, with your life, and, you know, it can't be something like committing a crime or something like that. But, like, let's say it's just a small commitment that you promised to your friend, and just out of integrity, you know the right thing is to step up to the plate. By doing so, you are exercising your discipline muscle. Mm-hmm. You know, things like, they're just small things that I make myself do in order to lead a more disciplined life. I believe that inner clutter is expressed in outer clutter, or vice versa. So I try to keep my outer environment as organized as possible. That's me exercising my discipline muscle. Oftentimes what happens is you'll say something like, you'll write on your to-do list a lot of things to do. And then you look back at your to-do list 2 weeks ago and there's nothing done. When you write something down and you don't do it, you're essentially breaking a promise to yourself, you know. And so I'm a big proponent of when you write it down, it's not like you're writing it in stone, but if you're not going to do it, or if you decided you don't have to do it, check it off. You just cross it off. But if it's something that you really need to do, you need to do it. You just need to do it, because if you don't do it, again, you're exercising the non-discipline muscle, you know. Oftentimes people will write down, what I've seen in to-do lists, people will write down a really big to-do, write a book. That's too big, you know. You need to break it down to tiny, tiny little steps. Maybe it's go by the pond and think about what my message to the world is. And maybe it's that you need to do that all summer long or all fall long, you know, all autumn long. Just the smallest next step, be kind and gentle with yourself. You can't write a book, and then you get mad at yourself. Every time you look at that, I'm a big believer, and every time you look at something that you haven't accomplished and it's still written and you start to get angry and frustrated that it's not done, that's energetically pulling away your power away from you. So what you want to do is pull that power back into your space by cutting it down into small, easy steps. Something you could do, let's say you want to write a book. Maybe it's call a coach and figure out my next steps. You know, as easy as that. And then you can check it off, and then that'll propel you into the next steps that you need to do. So those are small little tips on how you can, you know, just take the baby steps toward actually training yourself to get things done.
They're amazing tips and really doable. Like, there's no reason why we can't choose at least something that you just identified and make it happen.
Yeah. As small as, you know, I remember when I was in college, and I had made the decision that I was going to quit piano. Now, that sounds easy, right? Quit piano. But for me, it was my life identity. Like, that's who I was. I was nothing without my piano. So, essentially, you were saying to me, in a way, commit suicide, die. Like, that's how it felt to me, you know? And so, what I did, so in my 20s, when I was like, I'm going to quit piano, I found that I couldn't get out of bed. I was really depressed. So I decided I have to keep going with piano because it's just who I am. Well, in my 30s, I again had that voice. You've got to move on. You can't keep doing this with your life. It's making you unhappy. So this time what I did instead was, instead of, say, quit piano, I wrote in my to-do book, in my little notebook, I wrote, get a hobby. Find a hobby. Do something that you love to do. And so who knew that, you know, I said, well, I want to make a cream. I want to figure out how to make a cream. And that was like my first step into this sort of sense of wonderment, of exploration, trial and error. It wasn't meant to be my next career, but it was like something I could do, and that was like something I could manage to do, you know? So that's a really good example of breaking it down into something that's much more enjoyable, makes you feel like you can do it, and you're going to do it, and then you can make the next step, next step, next step.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad you brought that up because it actually makes me think about the story that I know, but other people probably aren't familiar with how Omaroma came to be. And I think that is an important story to share, because so often what I find when I'm interviewing people about their purpose is that there's always a catalyst that leads people to create something that they didn't even really expect, and they arrive at this particular junction in their life and they're kind of surprised by what's unfolded but still joyful about it. So can you share a bit about how Omaroma came to be?
So let me step back a little bit. So I was at this really prestigious music festival in England, and I was performing for my like childhood idol, a famous cellist, okay? And I was performing with a cellist, and it was in this medieval church, and I missed one note. And it was one note out of a million, bazillion more notes that I was to perform. And so at the end of the concert, I felt like utter crap, you know. I got on the plane the next morning, and I was like, I couldn't sleep actually that night, because I was like, what kind of pianist are you? That's horrible. I mean, this is one note. You know, you're terrible. Can you call yourself a pianist? I mean, I was just really beating myself up. And I got on the plane and I was like, oh my God, where have I come? You know, that my self-esteem, my self-worth hangs on one note. Like, it was so self-absorbed. And I was like, not a brain surgeon. No one died. Nobody's affected. People have probably forgotten about it. And here I am, miserable over this one note that I missed. So I realized that I had to change my life, and that's when I said to myself, okay, get a hobby. So then I started to, make creams in my kitchen. Like, I figured that that's something I really wanted. I'd always been obsessed with my skin and making sure that, you know, I didn't get wrinkles and things like that, okay? So I started in my kitchen with olive oil, and I was just like, what if I just, like, mixed olive oil, and I just spread it all over my face, and I started to break out into these pimples, you know, and I was like, okay, well, then olive oil is not the answer. What if I got some shea butter and mixed it with some coconut oil, what would happen? And so I put it together, and then I started to just take notes for fun, like, this is, you know, this is just going to be my step into freedom, you know, and having fun. And then I was like, wow, well, that felt much better, and it did clear up my eczema, but what would happen if I added, you know, rosehip oil? And so I started to discover these essential oils and these other oils, and I just did it on my own. And I think I kept building. I was very driven by, oh my God, like, if I mix these oils with this water, it turns creamy, and I do all this stuff, and every step of the way was like, it was okay if I was making mistakes suddenly. It wasn't about that one little mistake that I made. You know, it was about, oh my God, this is a great mistake because I discovered this. And so here I was in my kitchen in New York City, and I was creating this. It took me like 1,000 tries. And then I started to give them as friends to my colleagues, you know, my chamber music colleagues. And they started to buy them as gifts for their friends. And then that's really how it all started to become this business.
So, can you actually list the website, too?
Okay, it's omaroma.com, and that's O-M, like omaroma. And I think it's so funny that I called it that, because at the time, and then that was one of my other hobbies that I wanted to start was yoga. So I was really into this om at the time, and so that's where I got its name.
And it's amazing, you know, obviously I'm biased, but I also don't, you know, put my name behind anything I don't believe in. It's actually really, really incredible. So if people are interested in it, they definitely need to visit. So, and then, well, how was Savor the Success born?
Okay, so, you know, I had my first employee, and she happened to be a friend of mine, and she was not showing up to work on time, and, you know, she was making a lot of mistakes, and I was like, you know, here I am alone. I was a concert pianist all my life. I didn't ever really work in a corporation, so I didn't know how to build a business. So I was like, oh, my God, what do I do? So I decided to, like, get together some other women entrepreneurs and just start to have these masterminds where we could learn from one another. And so I think it was my way of also healing many, many years of feeling so lonely. It was my way of healing that. And so we started in New York City, and it kept growing, growing, and growing. And then other people wanted that, too. And so other people have opened up chapters in, you know, California, in Southern California, Northern California, in Denver. And so, you know, we keep growing and growing. And now today we've got, like, around 15,000 online members, and we've got premium members as well. And then we also have a seven-figure club, which you're part of. It's a very exclusive club of women who have achieved six figures or more, and so we're helping each other to kind of get to that seven-figure mark and beyond. So, I don't know, I kind of love the idea that people often think that women are so catty and they're competitive, but in reality, we can all work together for a greater common cause, you know?
Mm-hmm. And we want to help each other.
Yeah. Yeah, but you
think women just naturally want to help each other.
They do. I don't know. Do you find that that's the case with every single woman? Or do you get?
Oh, no. I think at the core of how we're kind of designed on a DNA level, or a, you know, sort of long-standing sort of energetic level, we are nurturers, right? We want to nurture ourselves. We want to nurture other people. We want to help people grow. We're emotionally based beings, and we're relationship oriented beings. So I think we want to be in relationship with each other. We prefer to be in relationship with each other. And we do, you know, at the core of who we are, want to help each other. Now, when people have issues in their tissues, that gets in the way of that, you know, being as smooth as it could be. But I do believe at the core, that's what we want to create.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Definitely not, you know, always a realistic experience, but as you were sharing before, and this is my truth, like, I think once you, especially in business, once you reach a certain level of financial success, and that just being really the barometer of how much you've grown, you call a different type of person to yourself. Like, I, you know, now that I'm just kind of playing at a certain level, and I'm playing with other women that are in their power, it's actually very refreshing, and I don't feel like any stuff really comes up.
Mm-hmm.
Because I only hang out with women that are in their power, and when women are in their power, they're so comfortable in their own skin that they don't have a need to play those energies out or, you know, run certain programs on each other. They just show up so authentically and so much in integrity that it becomes about discussing ideas rather than people, and discussing visions, and discussing how to help each other, and focusing on the positive rather than, you know, whining and moaning and, mm-hmm. you know, backstabbing and all that kind of stuff.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that, you know, oftentimes, you know, I'm such a practical realist that I think that there comes a time where you do have to kind of bitch and moan about something.
Oh, yeah.
But Yeah, because often that's part of the process is to really get through, my employee, this blah, 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 or this blah, blah, blah. But then if you stay in that energy too long, it just perpetuates itself. So quickly after, laying it out there, there needs to be a moment where it's like, okay, stop, let's not talk about that anymore. Let's come up with solutions. And I think that that's sort of, because I've been studying the way that the seven-figure club women are versus people who may be kind of trying to get, they feel like they're caught in a rut, And I see some common qualities, and one of them is the ability to go from that place of complaint to the place of solution finding very quickly. And I think that that may be a key factor in how some people are able to get out of that rut versus those who may not be able to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with you. And I think some people become addicted to the drama and the chaos and the crisis that ensues from complaining. Like, it actually becomes an energy source. It becomes a really entrained pattern.
Right. And you know what? I think we've all been there. Like, I definitely was there, especially during my concert pianist days, where it was like the perpetual, misery loves company and let's make each other more miserable. Like, I loved that area. And it was fun, just to sit there and kind of bitch and moan about what you don't have in your life. And that in itself, I do think that many of us do have to go through that. And I was one of those people that had to go through that. But I have been there, done that, and I can tell you that when you keep doing that, as fun as it is, you just sort of perpetuate more of that in your life versus when you can constantly say, okay, what's best? What's next? Let's move on, It's a drama-free, it's a drama-free way of living. And I think that in many ways, when you've been addicted to it for a while, it's hard to let it go, but it's like, in a way, you get too busy to deal with that. Your time becomes so limited that either you spend your time doing that or you spend your time building something else,
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And going back to a point you made earlier, when you start hanging around a certain type of person, where people just don't really make room for that, it actually helps to train you to show up differently.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Exactly.
So how do these, how do the manifestation of these two different businesses, how does it help you create more effectively and help other people create more effectively as well or manifest more effectively?
So the first part of the question was?
How do these two businesses, when you look at what they've taught you, how does it help you create more efficiently or more effectively?
I think a lot of it, two things come to mind when you ask that. Often it's compare and contrast. Like, I see, because of it was a success, I'm able to really observe the qualities that the people who are able to manifest quickly have versus not. And so I'm able to kind of bring that to light. And oftentimes when I am able to bring it to light, people are like, oh, that might be why I'm stuck. I'm going to try this instead. I think people find that very helpful. And with Omaroma is sort of my playground where I allow myself to make mistakes and be a fool and not be ashamed to admit it and show it and shine the light on it. So, like, I think a lot of people like to, some people are different. Some people don't want to show their mistakes, and that's fine too. But because of my background where mistakes were so bad and you got punished for it, I think that Omaroma is just the total opposite. And so I use that as a total example for Save and Success members where it's like, well, I did this and it really didn't work, or I did this and this really worked, and then kind of use that as a tool to teach.
Mm-hmm. I kind of like mistakes, I have to be honest.
Yeah?
And I know you do as well. Well, I mean, at the time, they can, when you don't see it coming, well, I don't even believe in mistakes per se. I just think that everything is a creation of our mindset, and so when our mindset shifts, we create different realities. So our outer world just reflects back to us what's going on and how we can show up differently. and how to learn how to manifest more clearly. You know, we often attract what we think we want, but when it comes, we're like, oh yeah, I actually wanted something different. It looked different in my mind, or whatever it is.
Right.
But if you think about it, I know for me and other people I've talked to over the years, I'm sure it's the same for yourself. My most memorable and sort of transformative shifts have come from things that I had to kind of go through some nigglies with, as opposed to, you know, things that just came easy. They stretched me more. And also, when you have a quote-unquote mistake, you pay attention. It's like, okay, I do not want to repeat that. So what do I need to know right now to not do this again? I think it's more motivating to kind of shape up and get the ducks in a row, so to speak.
So that's, yeah, exactly. And that what you said was really interesting, and I prescribe to that philosophy completely as well. I don't know if I believe in mistakes either, because, you know, mistakes are just kind of, they're just different turns. Like you take, you just went a different way, you know. And I also, it's interesting because one of my friends once told me, she was like, you know, you've had failures that didn't work, and you're still living. And I kind of looked at her, and at first it jolted me. I was like, I haven't had failures. I honestly believed that. I was like, I haven't had failures. And I think it's because I really look at, I don't think that because you didn't make money on a project, it was a failure. I don't think that because this happened, it was a failure. I think that because it happened, you learned something deeper about yourself and a different way to go. And it's just all about auto, you know, kind of like auto-correcting, and it's just all about, okay, get back on this road, get back in this, okay, this road, you know. And I don't know. To me, failure is kind of non-existent.
Well, even the most successful entrepreneurs, if you look at someone like Richard Branson, for example, or Donald Trump, or, you know, a whole host of other people that are, you know, at a certain level of financial abundance, they've had tons of failures. And they're still standing, and it really taught them a lot, and it helped them tweak all the things where they had leaks in the bucket, so that the next time they built the next thing, it had a much more solid foundation and could thrive a lot more quickly. I think, yeah, and there's never a straight line in anything, and whether you're paying a business coach to learn a lesson or whether you're learning a lesson through a mistake, it's still, you know, you still have to invest something in your learning and your transformation, whether it's your time or your money or your energy or whatever it is. There's always got to be an investment or an expenditure of energy.
Right.
In my belief.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. So we agreed that there are no mistakes.
So all of you listening who are using mistake language all the time, you know, it's your opportunity to find a different word. So, so aside from Om Aroma and Savor the Success, and I know, I mean, I know a lot of what you've got going on. I'm sure I'll even be surprised when I hear it. You're working on your book. But what else, what other projects are you creating right now?
So, you know, it's just with Om Aroma, just, you know, making it bigger and constantly growing. That's what I love about that business. It's just like your work is not done and you still get to do so much more. With Savor the Success, you know, I'm really kind of tweaking the different levels of membership that we have, and then, of course, the book. And then I'm also really, you know, my next big thing is I want to spend more time with my daughter. So I'm just trying to put my business into order so that I can, you know, get done by 3. And she's only 2, but I'm already looking at preschool here in New York City. You have to, like, get crazy about preschool this early on. But then I want to be there to pick her up at 3 o'clock, and there's like my, no one is contacting me. Like, I'm trying to train my employees and get my businesses so in gear that by the time she's 3, like, they can handle whatever it is they need to handle. That's it, you know? So those are kind of my projects of the year.
And, you know, in the spirit of talking about projects, and there may be some people listening who kind of say, okay, but why keep striving? Why keep creating new things? And why keep manifesting? Like, at what point do you not you personally, but any of us stop that? Like, is there a point, like, are we doing it because we're unsatisfied? Will we ever feel complete? Like, what is really the purpose of, you know, creating new projects all the time?
I think in many ways it's all about becoming more of who you are. And at some point, when you have achieved a certain amount, it becomes more about helping others. And so it's interesting because Audrey Hepburn has this quote that I absolutely love. And I don't think it's her quote. I think it was one of her favorite quotes that she got from somewhere else, someone else. But it goes something like this. You know, when you're young and you're trying to make things happen for yourself, just remember you have two hands. You have two hands, yes, to help yourself. And as you get older and you're able, one hand is meant to help yourself and the other hand is meant to help someone else. And I think that it evolves, the manifestation does evolve into, okay, so here, I've built my two businesses. Well, what else can this be about? Well, it's about giving jobs to other Americans. Okay, well, what else is that meant to be? Well, it's about, you know, putting together a brand that really inspires other people. Okay, what else is that meant to be? Is that meant to do? And do you kind of grow more and eventually, you know, becoming more and more of who you are meant to be? And I think that's how you spread happiness on a much deeper level to others.
Yeah, it's said that when we're not growing, we're actually dying.
Yeah, well, you know, it's so funny when you said that. When you said, at what point do you know, are you satisfied? I thought, when you're dead. You know, I thought it was too morbid for this conversation, Jennifer.
Birth, death, rebirth, you know, it's all part of the same continuum.
All part of the circle.
We die all the time.
Yeah.
When you think about it, every single second that passes, we're closer to our exit point.
I don't know if I'm ready for that conversation.
What's that song about live while you're dying or something like that? I can't remember, but that's really, I mean, really it's making the most of what you have here. That's our greatest purpose, is to be the embodiment of, you know, the universe, so to speak, allowing the universe to move through us and to just constantly create an experience. And if we really look at the people that are the wealthiest on this planet, those are people that are literally living life to the fullest.
They've got their zebra money.
Yeah, and that's when they're remunerated the most, and they don't need a lot to live on, and they'll tell you that. And so much of what they do, like, at some point when you start generating a certain level of income, you can't help but want to give back, because you, everything after that is just like monopoly money. So you grow to the point where you just naturally want to give back and share.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I also think it's part of that birth, death, and rebirth process, where we get a download, we create it, we push it out into the world, we receive a transformation through that, we receive feedback from that, and then it's time to share how we created that, and then once we pay that forward, then we get a new project that comes in. I believe we're always going through that cycle.
Right.
Of, like, learning, integrating, sharing, learning, integrating, sharing.
Exactly. Yeah. I totally agree with that.
Yeah. And when people harmonize to that particular cycle, they actually are in the flow. When we hoard our information, or we hoard our creations, or we're not sharing, or we're only thinking all the time about all these inspirations but never moving them into action, whenever we're kind of too much in one area, that's where we create an imbalance, and that's where we create the dissatisfaction or the disharmony or whatever.
I love that. You get stuck. The flow.
Yeah. And they're all wonderful places to be when we stay there temporarily, but when we're constantly just thinking about what we want to do, and most people actually think get stuck there.
So I think you need to start a religion. There are a lot of people who think that of you, Jennifer. You got to start this religion.
Yeah, that word religion is pretty loaded for me, but maybe I'll start a movement,
a spiritual movement. You're a thought leader.
Well, it takes one to know one, lady, so there you go.
Oh, I'll take that. Thank you.
You are welcome. So as we start to bring our show to a close today, what do you feel like we haven't talked about that would be really serving to people that are listening today?
I think my message of the day is this: invest in what's real. I think what's real, you know, is really about relationships, your work, what you're meant to do, your family, and of course, you know, in my view, food is totally real. So invest in it. It does. I think food has serious ability to make you happy. I mean, not if you abuse food, but just like sit down and have a real meal with those you love, you know, and really savor what you're eating and savor those around you. And then afterward, make it a thing that you have to blast music and one of you has to learn guitar and you got to dance. Like, I did that all weekend and it filled you up.
Yeah, totally nourishing. It brings you into your body. It's, you know, you get to savor it, no pun intended. There's a lot of, you know, reality in food, but also a lot of metaphoric stuff that serves, for sure.
Right, exactly.
Cool. So for folks that are wanting to learn more about what you've got going on, how can they get in touch with you?
Okay, so you can go to Savor the Success, SavorTheSuccess.com. You can sign up for a free profile, so it's basically like a business directory of all fantastic women entrepreneurs. Our team goes through it and approves. Well, I think what makes Savor so special is that we have a quality team where, you know, about 3 out of 10 people are approved into the network, so you really do have to have a business. And then that's one way. Of course, there's Omaroma and Facebook. Just find me, Angela Gia Kim. I'd love to connect with you.
Cool. And actually, Facebook is so accessible nowadays. I think it's one of the greatest ways to stay in touch. So, and you always add a lot of value, by the way, in what you're posting and what you're sharing in your Facebook network.
So. Yeah, you too. As you know, I admire your Facebook ability.
Well, again, ditto. I believe this show is about you today. All right. Well, Angela, I'm so grateful that we got to share this time together today and dive into some really juicy content. I really appreciate you taking us to the high level, giving us some steps to take, and then some real tangible things to chew on and to consider when we really want to start shifting from where we are now to where we want to be. And really encourage all of you who are listening today to check out what Angela's got going on. She's definitely a person you want to keep track of because she's going to even bigger places in the next little while. And for all of you that want to stay in touch with me, please feel free to visit www.souljourneys.ca or visit me on Facebook as well. And until next time, wish you all a wonderful day and a wonderful week. Namaste.
You've been listening to Soul Purpose Central with internationally acclaimed radio host Jennifer Longmore, North America's Soul Purpose Expert, here on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Join Jennifer each Tuesday at 1 Pacific and 4 Eastern Time for your connection to the wisdom of the collective Akasha and selected experts who can align you to all things soul purpose. Prepare to be activated, aligned, and accelerated on your ascension path. To find out more about Jennifer Longmore, visit her on her site at souljourneys.ca.
Hey everyone, you're listening to Transformation Talk Radio. Don't touch that dial. We'll be beginning a brand new show at the top of the hour with one of our amazing hosts, Transformation Talk Radio. Talk radio to change the world.